What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. This is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. This week's feature artist is educator, playwright, performer, community advocate, Danjuma.
Originally, I'm from New Orleans, born and raised in that wild city. I grew up in two sections of the city, the Upper Nine until I was 9, 10 years old. Then I moved to Treme, which was a glorious experience. That's where the artists come from, your jazz musicians come from. And it really makes the city. And just by living there, you pick up art, you pick up music, you pick up culture. You know, this area of Mahalia Jackson, Louis Armstrong, you name it, Congo, I walk 3-4 blocks, I'm at Congo Square. So that's where I grew up at, on a street called Domain. It wasn't a totally carefree life. The beauty of growing up there, no matter how difficult things were, you had such a strong sense of community. So you can go to a neighbor's house, a relative house across town or across the street, and you can seek healing. You know, you didn't call it healing as a kid, but that's what it was. And it also, New Orleans, in terms of just my foundation, my cultural and social foundation, of course, is laid there. 1981, I moved to Southern California. It's a trip. The reason why, the police were terrible in New Orleans at that time. I'm a large man, and I had a serious interaction between police and the community in the 70s that resulted in New Orleans, I think, formed the first SWAT. And everywhere I go, I'm being stopped, whether I'm walking, whether I'm on public transportation, of course, driving. And I knew it was going to be a bad ending. Yeah, I can, you know, because I'm the type of person, I'm a risk taker. I like to do things, not anything illegal, but out of the norm. So I decided to move to California, San Bernardino, where I lived there for 6 years. I finished college there, my first marriage. And it was such a breath of fresh air to meet people from other areas of the world. You know, because New Orleans is black or white. You live over there and you live over there. So now I'm in an area where, you know, at least you have some space. And I majored in political science down there and I had a great time. I came up to the Bay Area for a May Day celebration about 87. I said, I'm moving up here. 88, I'm in the Bay Area. So I regard the Bay Area as my second home, whereas New Orleans, given my foundation of roots and the culture, the Bay Area has been and continues to be my mentor and teacher in terms of how to widen and expand my humanity, how to develop programs in terms of my art and my educational background to meet needs of the community and humanity. I had my son up here, my second marriage up here, and met wonderful people. I mean, when I was in New Orleans, I went back and as part of the show deals with that. When I was there, all I can think about the Bay. Okay, the South is still the South. Even if you're in New Orleans, there's still slave code light. And so I said, okay, I got to get back to the Bay. About 6 to 7 weeks out of me getting back to the Bay, and I'm living off, you know, minimum income, I said, I'm going back. I don't have a plan. I'm going to pray. I'm going to meditate on this. And everything just fell into place. And 6 weeks I was out. Thank you. Yeah.
Tangible, talk about the art forms that you engage. I mean, you talked about first being exposed to them when you lived in Treme. What have you carried with you? What if you someone said, what kind of art do you do? What would you say?
That's a good question because if you strip everything away from me, education, blah, 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 writing, I take more pride in writing than anything else. So I put much more time into writing than anything else. I just loved, and it started a very long time ago. The first book I read, I'm 16 years of age, junior in high school, a book entitled Claude Brown's Man Child in the Promised Land. And I didn't know we wrote like that. I didn't know we told stories about ourselves like that. And from then it went on to Maya Angelou, everybody. And so writing has been the piece of me. It's home. Writing is home. It's my form of healing. I like reciting the poetry. I'm even enjoying going on stage 2 days from now. Gonna be the first time I've been up in front of an audience like that in over at least 12 years. But I'm most satisfied with the fact that I'll be showcasing the writing. And yeah, that's where I'm at, the writing.
So
It's
let's talk about your piece. Let's talk about wounded healing.
okay. So I like to begin with the concept. So wounded healer is in a universal concept, universal archetype. So in Africa, Isis is a wounded healer. Western culture is Chiron, the centaur, half horse, half man, and his astrological sign is Sagittarius. And the idea behind a wounded healer, one who have wounds or suffer wounds that aren't really healed, yet they provide support for others. They use their wounds as a healing agent, although their wounds haven't healed. And so that's the jump off point. Now, in my particular situation, I had a serious substance abuse problem. You won't recall, but
I was gonna say, I probably won't recall because I was abusing substances myself.
we're probably looking at each other like that.
I know. Liz.
Let me put it to you like this. You say, Benjamin, why don't you just go get a towel and wipe your face? So, as I describe in the piece, I'm off the chain. I'm a one-man party. November, Thanksgiving week, and I have a heart attack, and I had to have, I had surgery, and the way I cured, it's called spontaneous remission. You don't go through counseling. You don't go through 12 steps program, anything like that. It's divine intervention because I knew it was over. I'm in this apartment by myself and I'm weak, however, I survived it. So that's the first half of the play. It's about an hour, deals with that whole how did I get there in terms of because I wasn't, and I didn't like smoking marijuana. I did this in my 50s. Let's cut to the chase. I'm 50 something years old. I decided, oh, let me try something. And I look back how I survived in the Bay Area or thrived in the Bay Area because it was so expensive and I had a family. I worked. I went from teaching a class, I was a consultant for a group home and residential treatment centers. I was a mentor, a supervisor, so I never took the time to just deal with my issues. You met my son. He's at Florida A&M. I decided to leave all those other. Matter of fact, he's married, and I'll be a grandfather in a month. And then, so here I am. I stripped myself of anything that fed my identity. Well, what do you fill it up with? And they caught up with me. And yeah, so the first half of the play deal with that. Then the second half deals with, since I'm in New Orleans, I take a retro look at the wounded healers in my neighborhood, primarily the women. It's really a tribute to the, as I say, the women hold it down. Men come and go, women hold it down. And my mother, I describe her as being the best living room preacher east or west of the Mississippi. Now, as a kid, you don't know that she's wounded. You don't know what's going on. All you know that here this woman with this passion to preach. And it wasn't a damning type preach, right? It was enlightenment. And then I grew up, as I grew old, I realized she was a wounded healer. How I got into this work, because when I graduated from college, I had my degrees was in political science. I was going to the UN, I was a globetrotter, blah, blah, blah. And a friend of mine asked my wife and I to be house parents in Southern California, where we live with kids who were classified as emotionally disturbed children. And we lived with them, you know, as their parents. And it's like how the universe, you can say the universe pulled me into it on my inner knees, drew me to it. But now I'm working with, and I really didn't know people abuse their kids like that. That was a shocker to me. And that led to me moving to, when I moved to Northern California, working at various youth centers, and I developed skills where I can open up group homes. I wrote proposals and supervising in that area. And that led to mental health. I work with adults, which was very revealing, because now I'm getting insight into my, not only my mother wounds, but many brothers and sister wounds. And we don't deal with it enough. We definitely don't deal with the wounds, you know. And we have young people with all these wounds having children, and they passing that on. Yeah. And that's where I'm at now.
Thank you for sharing that. Writing, talk about the healing nature of writing your story.
Okay. Well, it's about the process, right? It's the process in terms of sort of the idea of circulating. But I came into awareness that the way the divine sends you, or the way I'm calling it the divine, someone else may use another description, but how that information comes to you, because that something will come to me and I'll pop up 2 a.m., 3 a.m. in the morning and start writing it, right? It reminds me of that little cute little quip that Michael Jackson said years ago. If he doesn't do a particular song, God's going to give it to Prince. Well, that, you know, it's inspiration. It's inspiration. Sometimes you don't know where it comes from, although you just know, okay, I got to write this. I have to write this. And it may stay on your plate. In my case, I have work that has been on my plate for 20, 25 years, but it's personal. So it's not like I'm trying to commercialize it, you know. It gets there when it gets there. It took me a while to find voice. I was writing and writing, and I wrote a piece called The Good Man, and it's poetry, and it's about a blue collar worker, and how, because New Orleans is a labor intensive city, so it was about individuals I grew up with. They work hard, and they still come up short, you know. But they believe in their families and what they have to do. So the piece is called The Good Man. I said, oh, I got it. That's when I realized that, you know, this is my voice and where I'm coming from. Yeah.
There's so much you said in there that's so important. I do want to circle back because it's one of the things I'm ringing the alarm bell around, and that is the ways I just did a long. I just turned 50,
Oh,
and my guy and I rented
you're
like.
young. You're so young.
But I wrote in the piece, right, that I didn't think I would make it this far, because of the choices that I had made. And the people that love me didn't think I'd make it either, right? So we were all sort of standing there surprised. But I talked about the cycle, right? It was work, use, drink, work, use, drink, work, use, drink, work, use, right? Because and I've told my guy, I was like, it's the work, like it like not completely, but that, and there's no room because of the crisis our people are in, because there's always an emergency, because there's always someone that needs, and it's always drastic, right? There's like there's no little emergencies in the hood, right? Everything is serious, right? It's not, you can be like, I'm sorry, I need to rest right now, I'll call you later, right? That's just not. So I've been in this conversation with myself and whoever will listen to me run my mouth about how do we do what needs to be done? Because I think the pendulum, this whole I need a nap every 20 minutes culture that has entered our movement is going to get us killed. How do we hold the reality of our people and being, of service? And talk about, I mean, I think maybe it's just bringing it to the surface, just having a conversation about, yeah, this work can break you. And we need to stop invisibilizing that fact and dealing with it on the front end, I think.
I presented this proposal to two folks who are two colleagues. I said, we must develop programs and plans where we teach sisters and brothers in the neighborhood to do the work that we do.
That's right.
They become their healers and their family. We can start very small, like take two blocks, right? And say, okay, we're going to bring you to training. This is how you go about doing the work. Because we do not, we can't, we don't have the resources.
Agree.
But if we start a program where, okay, let's take 5 or 10 pilot families, train them with the promise that, okay, we're going to teach you and you're going to teach other members in the community and the family. That's the only way we can get it done. I presented that proposal. One woman actually told me, she had the audacity to say, oh, you want to take a job away from me?
Yes, that yes, and see, that's what I mean about this moment, like the privatization and monetization, celebritization of our movement, and people think this is about making six. Listen, we did this work. When you met me, Dan, I was doing this work for free, because it's about the people, and that's what I said that at the conference. I said it's not about us getting out of the trenches; it's about training more people to be in the trenches so that
Training
we
more people
even the military be rotating
and
soldiers.
really and presented the way you're doing this for your family because you're doing it for your family, you're doing it for the community because you're going to take this tension out of your family. And I have a model. I was a community resource person for a youth agency, and we used to bring it would be the kid, the centerpiece, and then we would bring all the family members and any other friend of the family that's a stakeholder in that family, and we work on that together. And we taught the family how to deal with that kid. So along that model, we should form. Like I said, somebody come up with the proposal, and I'm ready to collaborate with somebody on that because that's the only way we're going to deal with this. This one social worker from the county or from some agency dealing with some acute situation while another one is popping up on the other side of town. And on top of that, what I've learned, I've been doing this since 86 and Oakland since 88. If we don't control it, how is it that all the black folks under the mental health system have the diagnosis that they have? Or I worked in a house, all of the young men were classified as conduct disorder. So it's not even taking time to really understand what's going on. So
And it used to
yeah,
be
we have to do
schizophrenia
that.
was a white people's disease. They didn't give it to us until they decided it benefited them, right? People don't know that, but really, like that mental health issues belong to white folks.
One young man out, it's over 90 something, but I still remember his comment. He said, Danger Ma, I came in here with one issue, and now I got 10 issues.
See? But that's where the money is, you know. That's
right.
Why, that's where the money is for this system.
Yeah, yeah. So the plague doesn't deal with it directly, but it gets it. You know, when I talk about, because my mother was schizophrenic, so but I grew up with that. I didn't know, you know, right. Then I learned. Right. So I accept all that I've been through because the way life unfolds, it unfolds. That's how we learn, right? So it's been a good life. Yeah.
Right on. We are going to wrap up soon, but I want you to talk about what is this Danjuma's portfolio? What is that?
Okay, Danjuma portfolio. I use the artist, you know, icon because I've been involved. The way I trained and teach and taught myself, it was like a combination of endeavors I engaged in. So it's been the academic world because I used to teach political science and then working with youth, working with adults, and of course the writing. So all of the activities that I've been engaged in over the years, I've sort of created a program, if you will, or different programs. So I can work with people who want to design some workshops in terms of authenticity, because that's where people are missing a boat. By the time you come through this meat grinder, you don't know your head from your toes, right? I mean, your head from your toes. So help people get back to authenticity. Of course, the writing workshops. I went back. I finished my PhD in metaphysics. So to work, to really get at spirituality, because what people get, you know, the spiritual thing is really, it's simple or complex. We don't know anything unless you do your own research. They call a man Jesus and his name is Yeshua. I mean, and people just accept it. You know, even our own names, you know. And so my work deal with authenticity, getting back to the real you, getting back to the genuine you. We do it through the art. We do it through workshops. I'm an ordained minister now in metaphysics. And I would like to see, I have a lot on, you know, you have plans and all that, but we need a nice healing center in Oakland. More like a drop-in, nothing formal.
Man, you need to slide to the people's house. We got that. We got that block with acupuncture, body work, foot soaks.
Where it's located?
We're at 893 Willow, and it's in the bottoms of West Oakland.
Okay.
It's called the people's house. We got Chinese physician doctors in there. We got energy workers in there. We do the NADA protocol to deal with the addiction. It's popping. It's free.
I lost 80% of my eyesight.
Oh, wow, Dendra.
Yeah, I walk with a cane now.
Okay.
I mean, I walk with a cane. That's not because of the eyesight exclusively, because I also lost I'm getting my mobility back, but you're probably too young to remember. But on Laughing, the old sitcom, they had the old man who would shuffle and try to get dates with old women. That's how I walk. You want a date? Anyway.
Well, you should come through.
What's the address?
It's 893 Willow Street in Oakland.
Okay.
It's the people's house.
That's West Oakland. That's West Oakland.
It's West Oakland. It's in the bottoms. And the first and third, in fact, we will edit this out because it's time dating. But in fact, tomorrow from 3 to 7, they will be there. And you can drop in and meet. And you know what? And we do individual plans, especially with Black older folks. So that's our priority. So yeah, come through. We'll take good care of you. Promise.
Yeah, okay. I'm definitely going to come down there.
All right, good. All right, family, you have been listening to Law and Disorder. I am your host, Kat Brooks. This week's Resistance and Residence artist is educator, playwright, performer, writer, and community advocate, Danjuma. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kat.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. Our Resistance in Residence theme music was composed by Jesse Strauss. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.